Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that you can hear Bloomberg Radio live 24 hours a day right on your phone? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
With us, David Rosenberg of Gluskin Chef. As you filter this all together, the end of the first half of 2012, the state of the American economy.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that once again, we're underperforming expectations. Last year, the view was that we're going to have 3% growth. Tom, we came
May I suggest the rest of the street is catching up where you were?
Well, and sometimes that has me worried from a contrarian standpoint. But the reality is this. You take a look at the five of the past six quarters, U.S. GDP growth is running below 2%. You take a look at the past 60 years, when you've had that decay in terms of suboptimal growth below 2%, which is stall speed, inevitably you slip in a recession. And I think those odds are actually growing right now, barring some sort of massive exogenous positive shock.
Let's bring up a chart here. This is the core of Rosenberg's work, certainly the chapter he did for me years ago. Chart number one, if you would, Ali, in here. This is on the CRB index, and this is really the heart of the matter. This rollover, you call it a technical bear phase. Folks, this is just a rollover in the CRB index from a higher price. From the upper left to the lower right, as Gartman would say, is it a bear market in commodities?
Well, technically, anything more than a 20% decline is a bear market. This has nothing to do really with the U.S. economy. This has to do with the leakage from the spreading recession in Europe into Asia, because Asia is the marginal buyer of commodities. So this is less a U.S. story, more of the spreading slowdown we're seeing in Europe hitting Asia and then commodities.
What are you worried about most when it comes to the U.S.? Is it still Europe or is it the domestic story?
Well, I think there's two different shocks simultaneously. The first is that we're seeing the impact of Europe hit Asia and then the U.S. trade channels. On top of that, there's the fiscal cliff. Bernanke's talked about the fiscal cliff, but it hasn't happened yet. But what is happening is that households and businesses have no clue what their tax rate is going to look like next year. So when you model fiscal uncertainty into any sort of economic scenario in the U.S., what it means is that businesses build liquidity ratios, households build up their savings rates. This comes out of spending growth.
Right.
And that's the problem, is that you got the fiscal uncertainty coupled with the trade shock.
I want to stay in this, but we got to rip up the script here. Some headlines from Governor King of the Bank of England. Let's bring them up here and look at them as well. The governor says there is enormous uncertainty about the euro area. He says we're not yet halfway through the crisis. We spoke yesterday to Jim O'Neill of Goldman Sachs. Some consider him to be a replacement for the governor. Here's what Jim O'Neill had to say on the motivations of European powers.
The Germans are prepared to give on political union and that they want these things. It's really the French that sort of set this thing up with them in the first place who are being on the institutional framework, the ones that won't adjust much. And if they give on some really big picture fundamental things, my suspicion is you'd see a pretty different attitude out of Germany pretty quickly.
Okay, let's switch gears here to Europe. We're going to do that later. Let's do it right now with this news from Governor King. You and I and Sarah and Scarlett, we're all focused on what Soros says, what Ambrose Evans-Pritchard said in The Telegraph, what Peter Coy said in Bloomberg Businessweek. This idea of united Europe, you don't buy it, do you?
Well, I think that's ultimately, either it's going to be a united Europe or the ECB is going to have to come to the rescue and buy these peripheral government bonds en masse and do quantitative easing unsterilized. I mean, those are the two end games, because ultimately you get monetary union or political union. You need both.
Okay, here's the quote here from David Rosenberg. It's quite possible that the EU summit will produce something tangible, but we aren't holding our breath. I'll say 2 years of priming the pump did not save Greece. We keep track. Sarah's the keeper of the score of summits.
19.
Why are they doing this?
But this is the one that ends it all, right?
Well, it hasn't worked.
Well, we'll see. Ultimately, if you're going to have some dramatic action, you have to be shocked into it. Like the United States finally had TARP. But if I'm not mistaken, the first problems in the housing market started in the first months of 2007. By the spring of 2009, we get some finality. So you have to be shocked into it. Same thing happened in Canada, Tom. In 1994, 95, Canada got shocked into dramatic reform. So the question is, as Sarah had said, is this the epiphany that we're going to see Europe finally shocked into doing something rather dramatic?
What is the shock? Is it a Lehman crisis? Is it a Greek exit?
Well, it, you would have thought that, you know, with Spanish banks insolvent, with, you know, the onset of Eltro was basically French banks on the precipice of being insolvent. It always starts basically with some sort of financial or banking crisis.
So what?
You would think this is the existential moment for Europe, but.
Why does George Soros then say that this is the critical summit? If this is the 19th summit, and we've gone through this so many times before, and nothing's come out of it.
Well, I think because it's already hit Spain. All right, so this isn't about, say, Scarlett, it's not about Greece anymore, it's not about Portugal, not about Ireland. You're starting to hit really the large countries of the periphery, and Spain, and then you're talking about Italy. And both these countries, both Spain and Italy, cannot fund themselves right now, basically at appropriate interest rate levels that'll bring down your debt-GDP ratio. So that's what you're talking about right now, is that it's hitting the real large countries that are too big to fail, too big to rescue simultaneously. So that's why this is the existential moment.
A word that you invented, David Rosenberg, this idea of frugality. It's somewhat like austerity, but all of us, Europe and the United States, we're into a new frugality. What do you frame as a new formal for a new normal, rather, for Europe? Is it 2% GDP?
Well, 2% is probably being optimistic.
Yeah.
Look, the problem, it's exactly as you framed it. We're past the point of no return in the sense that these countries cannot grow their way out of the crisis. They can't grow their way out of the crisis. And even if they come up with some sort of pro-growth plan, it's structural reforms that'll take 5 or 10 years. Supply-side economics doesn't happen overnight. So they can't grow their way out of it. Ultimately, they got to take this debt. There's too much debt.
Right.
And it has to be restructured.
David, here's the confidence of the United States. And I'm sorry, it's a lower highs 3 times in a row. It's a less confident America. How do you fold that into economics?
Well, the reality is that almost every indicator, not just confidence, but the things that go into GDP, like income and like employment and production, none of them have gone back to the old highs, including confidence, as you show right here. So this goes down, Tom, as the most sluggish recovery in history.
Can there be a policy solution?
Can there be a policy solution? Absolutely. But what households and businesses need is policy clarity. And that's why the election November the 6th is so important, because nobody knows, Tom, at a minimum, there's things that we can control. We can't control Europe. We can't control our own fiscal policy. And it's not so much about controlling deficits. It's about supply-side economics, and it's about what are healthcare costs going to look like in the future, what is the tax rate for the personal and business sector going to look like in the future. That way we can actually plan and put capital to work. That's one of the big problems, is general fiscal policy uncertainty. That much we can control. Hopefully after the election, we'll get some clarity on that score and part some. We can't part every cloud, but that's one cloud we can part.
Right. David, 9 this morning Eastern, we get the Case-Shiller Index. Home values in the 20 biggest metro areas around the country. Our survey of economists says down 2.5%. This will be April of last year to April of this year. How long is it going to take housing to get back to what we would consider normal?
Well, I estimate that there's between 2 and 3 million excess housing units on the market for sale when you count in all the shadow inventory. So you're talking about at least another 2 or 3 years to clear out the inventory and put a definitive floor under home prices. There's no question that the decline in home prices is decelerating. Some people are claiming victory that we've actually put a floor under home prices permanently. I'm not so sure about that. But I still think this is at least another 2 or 3 years to get housing demand to absorb the supply, put a firm floor under home prices another 2 and 3 years, in my opinion.
Well, where are we here in the foreclosure cycle? You know, we had banks had to sort of stop foreclosing on homes to straighten out their paperwork. Is that paperwork straightened out, and is that going to lead to a flood of foreclosed homes coming on the market?
Well, a flood is a big word, but I think we're going to get more foreclosed homes now, and it's going to add to the inventory situation. And my sense is that when you take a look at where the value of these homes are being priced in the marketplace, it's going to put overall downward pressure on home prices over the course of the next several quarters.
David, you talk about commodities, you talk about inflation, you talk about all of this synthesizing into a central bank that's got to study it all, and they are the institution of last resort. What will the Fed do, given your slowing economy? Are they going to see disinflation with that, where they've got less choices? They've got less choices they can make.
Well, I mean, we've known they've had fewer choices, Tom, since they brought rates down to zero in late 2008. But we also know that Bernanke is willing to be extremely creative in terms of the Fed's own balance sheet. Right now, they're uncertain. I mean, the Fed is basically uncertain as to whether or not this current slowdown is just a payback from the abnormally warm winter we had in the first few months of the year. or is this a really true slowdown? So Bernanke tried to have it both ways, where they extended Operation Twist. At the same time, he held open the olive branch for more quantitative easing. So he hasn't ruled it out.
Right.
If you look at my forecast, more QE is coming. It's really a matter of is it going to be
later.
Can
it be effective, though? I mean, that is the question. You have that great chart on it. We'll see later. Can QE be more effective?
The answer, well, it depends on your definition of effectiveness. Is effective, I'm going to create a 3 or 4 month rally in risk assets. Well, maybe it'll be a 3 or 4 week rally. But the reality is this. They've already done, when you think about it, three big rounds of non-interest rate easing. QE1, QE2, Operation Twist, and the still goes down as the weakest recovery on record. So, but there's some central bankers that'll say, well, it would have been worse if they didn't do anything. But in terms of generating escape velocity in the economy,
right,
generating self-sustaining growth, this is not a monetary policy issue. It's a fiscal policy issue.
What do the optimists most get wrong? You get beat up every day. You're like a pinata for the relative optimists. They hate you. What do they get wrong?
I think that most, well, I don't know if they're getting it wrong anymore, but most economists were looking at this through the prism of a classic business cycle, a plain vanilla recession recovery. They didn't look at it through the prism of a wealth destruction, credit contraction, asset deflation cycle, which generates completely different results in the recovery phase.
David Rosenberg with us with Gluskin Sheff Toronto. He joins us at our world headquarters here, and we say good morning to all of you on Bloomberg Radio, Bloomberg Television. Sarah?
You've been bearish. You've been negative on the U.S. economy for a long time. You've been spot on in calling the sluggishness. Last time we spoke, though, you said that there would be one scenario toward the end of the year that would play out that would actually turn you optimistic. This is momentous.
Well, I because I saw it happen in Canada where... We're not even in Canada in the early 90s, but even in the U.S. in November 1980, the change will come at the political level, then in the financial markets, then in the economy.
But spell it out. What kind of criteria do you need to see to turn your view?
Well, we need to get fiscal policy clarity. What we got to do is first principles. What is it in America we can actually control? We cannot control what's happening in Europe. We can't control China's five-year plan. We can't control...
We can control which president will be elected.
Well, unfortunately, I can't vote, but I saw this happen in the past. The reality is this. In 1980, we could have been uber bearish, and believe me, I've been very cautious. We had a 16-year period of economic stagnation.
Canada?
No, I'm talking about 66 to 82 in America. Like Canada was its own particular problem in the early 90s, but America had its own problem. In 1980... We had dramatic political change.
Bloomberg
we had a rewrite
surveillance
of the tax code.
With Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening
David
via our new
Rosenberg.
Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know you can personalize the ticker that crawls across the bottom of your screen? Simply tap on Menu in the upper right, then choose Settings and Personalize My Ticker. If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.